Very informal. Hey, Charles.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Great.
So we're in Sammamish today, which is near Issaquah. It's off the main campus.
Uh-huh.
And we're out at our customer support and services buildings. Did I get that right? I'm so used to saying PSS. I got to say CSS now.
Yep, customer service and support.
Okay. And we are with the vice president of CSS, Kathleen Hogan.
All right.
Welcome.
Thanks.
So tell us a little bit about your job. What does that mean?
Good question. So technically, I'm the Vice President of Customer Service Support and CPE. So CPE is Customer and Partner Experience, where we're focused on satisfaction overall for the company. But from a support perspective, it's about whether it's an enterprise customer, whether it's a consumer, small business, whether it's Xbox, whether it's SQL Server, it's customers who need our help, making sure that they get productive use out of our technology, responding to the customer and responding to their needs.
So the people in your organization are dealing with unhappy people.
Usually they call because they have an issue, right? It depends. If they're calling customer service, sometimes it's for program information, not necessarily just tech support. But when they end up in tech support, then yes, it's usually they have an issue and they need help.
So how many people are in your org?
There are 6,000 full-time employees, roughly, and then we have contingent staff and other support, depending on the volume.
And you're the Uber boss?
I'm the Uber boss.
Wow.
So what does that mean? What are you responsible for, specifically?
Besides what I just said.
What does day in the life look like for you?
Well, I guess if you think about how we're organized, maybe that'll help answer the question. We've got, we think of global businesses. So we've got our commercial business, where we're really responding to enterprise customers, et cetera, with both call center support in the sense of people on the phone and then also people who will go on site depending on the issue. We have our consumer support business, which are dealing with consumers, whether that's around MSN, Xbox, Windows, Office, et cetera. And then we have customer service, which is sort of the front end, if you will. The front end of the funnel, which is if somebody just wants to call 1-800-MICROSOFT on any issue, that's the front end customer service. So if you think about those are the different global businesses, and then we've got centers around the world. And so then we have regional leaders who execute on those businesses within the region. And then we also have an online support function, looking at how we can help people get their answers in a self-help manner, mm-hmm. and then some shared services. So I guess a day in the life would be whether it's talking with a region about how we're executing support in, say, Japan and any issues there, or looking at how we're supporting our commercial business, our commercial customers, and looking at the strategy for that business, or looking at online and our traffic there and our resolution rate and what we can do to improve search or content. Those would be the different types of issues I'd get to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Hmm. And how long have you been at Microsoft?
I joined Microsoft in 2003. So I guess 3 years in August.
Where did you come from?
I was a partner at McKinsey, which is a consulting firm, strategic management consulting firm. I was a partner there focused on software and within software, sales, services, and marketing, and was actually served Microsoft. So Microsoft was a client for about 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. So while I joined in 2003, I had familiarity with the company, having served a lot of companies in the software industry.
How did you start to gravitate towards high tech and software in your career?
Good question. I think it was sort of I happened into it, to be honest. I wish I had a more sophisticated answer than that. But when I was in college, at the time, I hate to say this, being at Microsoft, but Oracle recruited me. And I was living in the East Coast, and the West, California seemed interesting, and I thought I'd go do that for a year, and I sort of just happened into it. I really wasn't, frankly, that serious at the time. I thought I'd work for a year, save up money, go back and get my PhD. That is, at the time, my mental focus. And then just really loved it. Loved the technology, loved software, loved being in business, and so didn't end up going back to get my PhD.
So you don't have a deeply technical background? You have more of a business and marketing background, or?
Well, my undergrad at the time was in applied math and economics. And so when I joined Oracle at the time, they actually had me slated to do marketing, but I said, no, I really wanted to do development. And so they were growing fast enough at the time that I became a developer and then quickly was a development manager. I think it was just they were growing so fast. And then after 4 years, I went and got my MBA.
And what do you like about that? What did you like about being a developer?
Oh, I loved, well, let's see. There are a lot of things I loved about that. I've got to go back. I don't want to date myself, but it wasn't yesterday that I was in development. I love solving problems, right? So I love the idea of trying to make something work, and you're running it, and you're running it, and then all of a sudden it clicks, and you get it, and it works. And I love then being able to show the customer. I mean, at the time we were building financial applications, and we were running it internally at Oracle, and also external customers using it. And so they'd say, hey, here's this problem, or here's the solution I'd need. And being able to show the customer, either internally or externally, what you developed and how it could help them run their business, that was a lot of fun. I love the people, right? The development community was a fun community to be a part of, you know, just on a day-to-day basis. You know, we all sat in our cubes and hung out and wore, you know, T-shirt and jeans, and that was all fantastic.
So when you were even younger in high school and elementary, were you intrigued by computers? Were you kind of that kind of a person who liked to play with those things? Or
No. I have to be honest. I always liked math, I have to say. So my degree at Harvard was applied math and economics. But again, that I just, you know, I showed up. I had to pick a major. That was the major I picked. So I can't say it was anything more than that. But I always liked math. For some reason, I like math. I like solving problems. But I really wasn't into computers until I showed up at Oracle with this job. And then I kind of the whole world of computers opened up to me.
Hmm. Cool. So tell us a little bit about diversity in your organization here at Microsoft. Are you finding that we are getting better as a company about expanding our reach to more diverse groups?
I don't know if I would assert we're getting better. I'd say it's super important to us. It's certainly important to me that we represent I think diversity is important for a number of reasons. One, I'd like to represent the customers we serve. I think it gives us better ideas to have diversity of thought on a number of dimensions. And so I think it's really important. You know, if you look at female in particular, I just looked at statistics. About 25% of our hires in the last month were women. So I'm excited about that, but probably could do a lot more. Mm-hmm. And same with underrepresented. Underrepresented populations. So,
What are some of the thoughts from senior leadership about what we can do to make the environment and the culture more welcoming for different folks from different, you know, cultures, races, right, ethnicities, the whole gamut?
One thing we've done, at least within services and IT, the broad group that I'm part of, is as a leadership team, we've gone through diversity training and recognizing that, you know, diversity is not just about what we'll say counting classes in terms of how many people you have, or this or that. It's about welcoming diversity of thought and how you actually encourage that and embrace that, recognizing perhaps some of the biases you have that you don't even know about and how that impacts how you interact with people. And so one thing we're doing is we've gone through that as a leadership team. We're rolling that out and just trying to make ourselves aware of how we can create an environment that's more inclusive and being aware of, you know, some of the things we may be doing that doesn't foster that environment.
Mm-hmm. What about one thing that Charles and I talk about a lot with our interview subjects is how to get young girls who are still in school, because we want to get them really young. We want to get them hooked really young, not just on Microsoft technologies, but in technology in general. What are your thoughts around how we can do that better?
And at what age are you thinking when you say get them hooked?
We're thinking 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
But I mean,
preteens.
But it also, there's the innate, like it's being able for people to spot innate capability, right? Mm-hmm. My daughter's good at math.
Right.
So theoretically, then that would mean she'd probably be useful or enjoy being in an industry where she can solve problems of a quantitative type, right? Like
right.
You.
And how do we make it cool and not geeky and nerdy so people are scared off?
Got it.
Wow. I wish I had the answer to that. I guess all I can say is, in terms of me personally, I do know that in fourth grade, Mr. Deadheart, that really was his name, but that was my fourth grade teacher, and he really encouraged me in terms of math and didn't have, you know, a certain expectation that, you know, as a female I should or should not be interested in that, and sort of was very encouraging. And so I think, you know, from my own experience, the more we can mentor and encourage women you know, whatever their interest is, right? Mm-hmm. I think that that's probably the key there versus assuming, you know, stereotypes because you're this or that. You wouldn't be interested or good at computers or math or whatever. Mm-hmm. The broader issue I probably have to think more about in terms of how to make it cool versus geeky.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think it's geeky necessarily. I think technology is fun and computers are fun. And some of my nieces who are 4 and 5 find it really interesting to be on the computer. So, and I think...
We're breaking down barriers.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So can we ask you a couple of questions about your personal life?
Sure.
What do you do when you're not at the office?
Do vice presidents have personal lives?
Yeah, do you have lives outside of Microsoft?
Yes. Although it's, you know, it's a constant, I think, you know, working full-time and balancing that is an ongoing, I don't want to say struggle, but something you're constantly trying to balance, right, in ebbs and flows. But, yes, to answer your question, I have a husband, Ron. We've been married since 98. Figure out and do the math in terms of how many years that is. But and we have one son, James Patrick. He just turned 4. And so basically that's, when I'm not working, that's really where my focus is on James and on my husband, Ron. Prior to James, I had a lot more activities. I used to do snowboarding. I used to bike a lot more. I'd like to go to different kinds of movies. Now my movies are centered more around Nemo, you know, that kind of stuff.
So speaking of stereotypes, when you talk about service and support, what do people think about that in general? Like when you meet someone at a dinner party and you tell them what you're responsible for and what you work on, what do people think about?
I think, I guess the stereotype that we don't like is that we, you know, sort of pick up the phone and it's the quick answer and that we're not... technical. I guess sometimes that's the stereotype that we're like, you know, maybe I shouldn't stereotype another company, but, you know, sometimes you're at home and you get the call center calling you about, you know, trying to switch your phone lines or trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe that's the stereotype we don't like because at the end of the day, the people who, in my mind, on the front lines have to be very skilled in our technology and they have to be very skilled in problem solving and they have to be very skilled in customer empathy and building that relationship. And so the skill set that our engineers have in terms of serving our customers, I think, is quite rich. And sort of trivializing that sometimes, mm-hmm. I think, is where people don't like that stereotype.
Mm-hmm. What are some other things about CSS that would surprise people, in your opinion, that people don't realize or understand or know about this organization?
Probably what would surprise people is that we touch, you know, 600 million people a year online, 50 million people over the phone, and we visit over 30,000 customers on site. So just the breadth of mm-hmm. this organization in terms of how many customers we get to touch, either online, on the phone, or in person, is probably broader than most people would think.
So based on that, being the face of Microsoft in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. what are your some of your guiding tenets and principles about dealing with customers?
Good question. You know, I could be trite and say the customer is always right. But, you know, there is an element of that, right? I mean, the guiding principle is solve the problem for the customer and do it with, it's important that you solve the problem, but how you solve the problem is equally as important. We track our satisfaction with our customers. You know, how satisfied are they? And the difference between, you know, we do it on a scale of 1 to 9. You know, the difference between a 6 or a 7 and a 9 is that human element, that customer focus, the customer empathy, how they communicate, in addition to solving the problem. So that's really our principle, is solve the problem, but how you solve it is equally important. We have a lot of training we go through in terms of how and the behaviors that I think make a difference in terms of our customer satisfaction.
So where do you go when you need support? Do you have a special line that you get to call for technical support?
I have my own line. I was like, well, I go to Microsoft. I don't go outside. I don't have a special line. No. I guess I don't know that I've, you know, our products just work. I've not needed support in a long time. So,
excellent.
Seriously, I don't know. Yeah.
So we have a couple of big products that are going to be launching in the next fiscal year. Is that a big deal for your org in terms of getting prepped and ready for that?
Absolutely. Right, we're calling it the launch of a decade.
Wow.
Just as if we think about from a support perspective, you know, between Vista, we've SQL, Office, you know, Xbox, MSN, we've just got phenomenal amount of technology coming down the pike, and we are super excited about it. You know, if you look at what excites us in CSS, you know, serving the customer, satisfying the customer, solving their problem, you know, that's very exciting to us. Mm-hmm. But also getting to participate and be a part of this technology innovation for Microsoft is equally as exciting to us. So I think that's what makes the job really wonderful, I think, to be part of CSS, is to get to solve problems, serve customers, but also to be part of this innovation wave. So, yes, that's a huge focus. In the next couple months, we're doing readiness reviews. You know, are we ready for all of these launches in terms of, you know, training, in terms of having the number of, you know, SEs staffed, et cetera.
Is it a little scary, too?
Oh, sure. I don't know if I'm scared. I really am excited. You know, there's the potential. I guess it's not scared. It's just, can we forecast is the biggest issue. How do we forecast so we don't overstaff, right, and have a lot of costs that we don't need, but at the same time we've got the SEs there to serve our customers depending on the volume. And sort of that's the big uncertainty, if you will, right now, is figuring out how much demand, what the volume is going to be, and being able to staff and have enough, you know, people ready to be there for our customers.
Now, what's your interaction like with the product team? So, for example, they're busy, you know, fixing their bugs and getting product ready to ship. So you guys have to do training. Do you have, like, ambassadors that go over there and hang out with the product teams and get as much information as they can and come back and train, or is it much more formal?
Yeah, it's probably more formal than that in terms of our engagement with the business groups. You know, we're involved in their beta testing, and so we're involved, you know, very upfront in terms of, testing and finding some of those bugs and leveraging that knowledge to then help train and get ready for RTM, et cetera. So we have a pretty formal process of engaging with the business group, getting ready for launches. You know, helping them, if you will, from a testing and beta perspective, and then also them helping us get ready.
Mm-hmm. And then when you get, say, an enterprise customer calls or anybody with an incredibly complex problem,
yes,
then the doors are open and the product team's right to help you guys out. Is that a struggle, or is it just like, no problem?
Well, in general, we like to think that in general we can solve the problem, right, without without relying on the business group. That's part of our job. Uh-huh. But in the cases where, you know, it requires, you know, business group escalation and getting the business group involved, we do have formal processes, and they have SLAs with us, standard agreements with us in terms of response times, etc.
Excellent.
But in general, we hope if we've done it right with the beta testing and all of that we don't need to rely on them too much for that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's it for now. Thank you very much for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, cool. Wow, that was a short one. You don't have any more questions?
It was almost a half hour.
Yeah, right. You probably have other things to do, huh?
No, I'm happy to hang out.
Cool.
This is.
So I will want to ask one more question. So we always ask, regardless who the interviewee is, about, you know, what would you do if you ran Microsoft? Now, I know that's an incredibly vague question, so how do we want to narrow it down to the diversity issue?
What would I do if I ran Microsoft?
You're on your own.
We've got some very interesting answers. I mean, and she basically already, I mean, Jennifer already basically asked, so what would you do more to increase the interest in having women come and work for Microsoft? Like, if you had the ability to make that happen, like, is there anything that could be done at the executive level, or even at a strategic level, that would attract more people? Because other companies are being very innovative in how they're trying to do it, right?
Right.
I can't mention them on camera, probably.
I guess to try to answer the question seriously,
okay.
although I'm not sure I can, is, no, I mean, for me, the most important thing that's been, one of the most important things for me in my career has been role models in terms of, you know, when I was at McKinsey, seeing other women who had babies, who worked part-time, who came back, you know, were part-time and then went full-time. And so seeing other women, you know, through their life cycle, if you will, and managing their career has been super important to me. So I think probably what we could do best is to show you know, young women coming up, that there are women in technology. Hopefully what you're doing here today is, you know, one small piece in that puzzle, but, you know, showing other women that there are other people doing that, and you're not alone, and I think that's one thing. For me, that's probably been most important, is seeing other role models and knowing that there are other women who've gone through the same struggles. And
yeah, and you can be
that you can relate to
leaders of a large organization.
Yeah, that you can relate to, and you can have the conversation around, you know, okay, what did you do when you came back from maternity leave? How did you think about your second kid? How, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So all of those types of discussions, I think, for me, it's been great to have other women to talk about that with.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I mean, that is an unbelievably vague question. we're trying to figure it out as we go. I mean, another possible question would be, how do you make software more attractive or less geeky? Like, is there stuff we can do in our products that will make it less of a geeky kind of thing, right? And that will attract more women and more people who aren't necessarily geeks, right? Anyway, 10:09. It's vague. We're vague.
Now, can we say thank you?
Yes,
and
now
goodbye?
We can say thank you. I'm sorry.
But thank
that was a good question.
Thank
All right.
you.
Take care.
Thank you.